As was already mentioned, the topic is nurturing healthy communication. But the part that I also want to bring out is that there's a little subtitle underneath it, Catch for Us the Little Foxes, and that's why you'll see the fox. Isn't that fox amazing looking? It's beautiful. And I think that's the thing that caught my eye when I pulled this photo, is that it looks so innocent sitting there in that greenery. And my trust and desire is this morning that you all actually know how to communicate. I don't question that. But we'll dive deeper into why is this topic important. But I'd like to start off, first of all, by how many of you remember your first date? Wow, there's a lot of you guys are learning back there. Raise your hands high because I'm going to pick on you if you don't. So what did you do on that first date? So I asked, what did you do on that first date? How about 8+ months of your dating? 8+ months. We had a Valentine's supper at our church. And there was one couple saying, oh, I think we did it in the shortest time from the time we started dating until we got married. Another couple said, no, I think we beat you. So I've learned to kind of give that in vague terms. But what did you do during those 8+ months of dating? How about the first, third, seventh, 10th, 15th, 30th year of marriage? We communicate. If there was nothing that you did, well, maybe I should ask this question. If you didn't actually talk on your first, second, and third date, I don't expect you'd be here today. So we can kind of look at that as an obvious, you know? So last time I mentioned this thing of how many of you like to talk, and yeah, I mean, if we look at it from the baseline of, yes, we're here, we had a first date, we obviously talked enough that we got invited back. But the real question is why do we find it so difficult to communicate well? Another question I have is how many of you men instigated the conversation about coming here this weekend? Look at the man going, I don't know, I can't remember. I bet you don't remember. But it's okay, you're here. Just don't fall asleep now. We'll talk about that in the next talk. So I'd like to just look at the title here, Nurturing Healthy Communication. Nurturing means care for, encourage the growth of, and the development of. Healthy means that it's thriving or flourishing. And that is the key thing that I want to make sure that we're all understanding here this morning is that I don't think that communication in and of itself is actually that you don't know how to do it. And if you are, we'll talk about that a little bit, and hopefully you're encouraged by that specific piece. But I want to just focus on that if your communication is amazing, it's still something that should be nurtured and kept healthy. So what is communication? It's the imparting or exchanging of information, ideas, and feelings with another. So I have to tell you something else about myself, and that is an AI-generated photo, so if anyone wants to challenge the quality of it, I couldn't find a photo that was real vivid of communication happening back and forth, and so they decided that those little dots were a great way of formulating communication. Maybe they're not smiling enough, but maybe it's a difficult conversation. But anyhow, communication is the imparting or exchanging of information, ideas, and feelings with another. Consider with me for a moment all that occurs when communication takes place. Just think about it. There's a lot of things that happen between the person that submits the information and the person that receives it. There's neurons in your brain that controls your speech. They coordinate your tongue, lips, diaphragm, vocal cords. Sound waves travel through the air. They enter into the listener's ears, and the eardrums react, send signals to the brain. The brain detects, decodes, and assigns meanings to the words. All of this happens with little conscious effort. In addition, 60 to 90% of all communication consists of body language, eye contact, facial expressions, and tone rather than words. How many of you have received a text message from your significant other and weren't sure how to read it? Maybe it was emojis. Maybe it was just words. But there was no tone to it. It was completely missing. And I think this is the one of the little foxes that can challenge our marriages, is that communication has become something that is so easily done and in so many different forms now, and we kind of forget how it actually is coming across. Your ability to communicate with your spouse is as marvelous as it is vital. Your words are the currency you exchange for access, knowledge, and connection to each other's souls. It's how you know and are known. So this is a photo of my wife and I on a date night, which, by the way, I'm a big advocate of. But this was actually a rainy evening at Bedford Springs in Bedford, Pennsylvania. And my wife's like, oh, let's shoot a photo. Well, I love photos, so I'm like, sure. But you know, there is something that I can look at that photo today and have memories about. And there was a lot of conversation that happened that evening, running through the rain from the parking lot to the Bedford Springs, because the way the parking lot is, it was congested, and I could have just given up and been like, no. But this actually mattered to her. And so we communicated through it, and we ended up having this amazing photo as a memory of it. Because the easy thing would have been to do is for me just to say, we'll just come back when it's not raining. Well, let me just tell you, probably still wouldn't have went there. Because we get busy. So the next thing I would like to do is just look at a few Bible verses to just kind of base this on Scripture. And what does God say about it? Proverbs 18:21. This is out of the New Living Translation. The tongue can bring death or life. Those who love to talk will reap the consequences. By the way, for all of us that like to talk, we are accountable. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer deflects anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. James 1:19, wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Proverbs 17:27, a truly wise person uses few words, and a person with understanding is even tempered. Colossians 3:13, make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Ephesians 4:31 and 32, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you, and all malice, and be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Here are just a few of the verses that I found. I have many others, but for the sake of time, I won't reference all of them. But the Bible does talk about communication. Maybe not specifically from an aspect of a married couple, but I think it actually applies. I know it applies. But so often, I try to read those verses, and that's when I'm relating, you know, to a brother at church or something else. But it actually is in our marriages as well. Just going to pivot a little bit. So I'm a man. I'm going to talk to the men just a little bit. If the shoe fits, use as women, put it on. But can anyone acquire the skill of communication? I see some heads shaking. Communication is a skill for everyone, regardless of temperament. Your personality doesn't dictate your ability to express and understand. Men can learn effective communication even if our differences of the way we communicate are different. Emotional intelligence and interpersonal skills are not personality specific. Question two, is learning the skill the only thing when it comes to effective communication in a Christian marriage? Pretty easy answer. Learning communication isn't enough about becoming a loving partner. Skill in communication alone doesn't define a loving spouse. Some skilled communicators misuse words for selfish purposes. And we all know this mustn't be in a Christian marriage. It takes time to grow in the communication category, and tragically, many of us men never grow out of underdeveloped communication. We can grow a beard, but our communication self is still learning to walk. There's going to be a few exceptions that say, I can't grow one. But my point here is that God gave us some things, and I think God gives us the ability to learn how to communicate as well. Just a few things to consider. Oops. Blame it on culture, upbringing, or what have you. Perhaps it's because on this topic, many men are fatalists. I know I was. I am who I am. She's verbal, I'm not. I don't need to express myself. I'm introverted. And by the way, I used to be introverted. I'm not a talker. I don't need to talk like she does. I'm not wired this way. I believed these things about myself at one point. In no other aspect of life would such futile thinking be acceptable. At work, if you lack skills, it's expected that you learn and grow. Husbands need not be victims of their own inclinations. Every husband can become a better communicator. I'm not saying perfect, but every husband can become a better communicator. It's a vital part of the whole. Husbands, give yourselves up concept. For those being molded into the image of Christ, this is truly incredible news. That we can. And we don't have to blame our culture and our upbringing and our personality style and you name it. I am responsible. You are responsible. Communication styles. Your communication style is a function of your personality, history, strengths, and relationship dynamics. Now, I think I have this little piece of paper in your handouts if it successfully made it. That way you can actually read it from your seat. I'd like to spend a little bit of my time here this morning because I feel like this is a foundational piece of being self-aware. And if I remember correctly, there was a lot of you all that this is your first time here. And so I feel like this is where we can start. And you can leave here and you can maybe lean in these directions. But we have a minus and a plus on the flexibility side. You know who you are if you're flexible or not flexible. And then we have the sensitivity side, those that are very sensitive to how other people think and feel. And so we're going to start at the top corner, the feeler. And unfortunately, my screen is too small. I should have checked that. The descriptors are relator, gets along, supportive, loyal, consistent, good listener. Their weaknesses may foster resentment, avoids confrontation. Maybe they're passive. Things they're irritated by. unpredictability, insensitivity, lack of awareness. Showing support, build and maintain trust, plan difficult conversations in advance, be dependable, grow in emotional awareness and maturity. That's a feeler. We're going to jump down to analyzer. The descriptor word for this person is they're a thinker. Detailed, focused, tends to be precise, efficient, organized, handles complexity well. Their weaknesses can be that they're a perfectionist, overly detached from feelings, inability to articulate emotions, things they're irritated by, lack of thoughtfulness, unpredictability, being surprised. Showing support, learn to speak with precision, schedule time for intentional communication, plan, reply thoughtfully. The mover. They're decisive, accomplished, driven, goal-oriented, direct, assertive, activated by outcome and goals. Their weakness can be abrasive, steamroll over others, intense, can be overly competitive, potentially controlling, irritated by inefficiencies, indecision, incompetence, obscure communication, showing support is speak in plain terms, show enthusiasm for goals, be a team player. And then we have an enthusiast, expressive, social, generally enthusiastic, optimistic. Their weaknesses can be intense, lack seriousness, irritated by routine. Showing support is listen to his or her ideas, dream without getting bogged down by details. Let them talk openly and freely, show visible enthusiasm. So the biggest thing of it is, if you look at the minuses and you look at the plus signs, an analyzer is low in flexibility and low in sensitivity. A feeler is higher in sensitivity and lower in flexibility. A mover is high flexibility and low sensitivity. Enthusiast is high flexibility and sensitivity. But the reason I'm sharing this with you and the reason why I put this as a handout is that it's good to actually know which one we are. I do have one question, and I'm not going to linger here long. I had mentioned this to some people I was talking to last evening, as it would be very interesting to know if we have any couples here that actually match. Like, how many of you are both analyzers? How many of you are both movers? Or both feelers, or both enthusiasts? Well, I'm just going to tell you that my wife and I are not the same. And I wasn't sure if I actually got someone to stand up or raise their hands and say they did match, what I was going to do with it. But it's just something for us to think about. The reason why I'm pointing this out is because we aren't the same. We're not. The other thing that I was communicating with several people last evening, and it's interesting to me to actually watch people interact as a couple. So not to put you on your toes, but I actually am watching every single last one of you. I'm looking for some of these people that are in the low flexibility or the high flexibility. So men, it's okay if we're the movers and the shakers, but we have to lean in the feelers' direction if that's us. How many of you think you know what I am? If you're not sure, ask my wife. She will let you know. Things to consider. What are your individual communication styles, which I did talk about, and how can you show support to one another? And I'd like to just stop here just for a second on the how do you support phase, is because I'm spending more time on this than I did actually in October, is because I just breezed over it. But I feel like this right here is the foundation of healthy communication. Well, I didn't know. I didn't know you were a feeler. I didn't know that. In the real world, have you ever seen this drawing, and I didn't go and find one, where it's a bunch of lines and it goes like this, and there's an A and a B, but we go like this to get there and we go all over the place? Some of us men and some of us women think it's an A and a B and a straight line. And that's how we like to communicate. We let the feelings and some of that, we go, fact. Talk about that a little bit later as well. Let's move to conflict. How many of you like conflict? What? There isn't one person here who likes conflict? Good. Now I know I'm not special. What is conflict? A clashing or sharp disagreement as between ideas, interests, or purpose. Conflict tactics, the method used to advance one's own interests within a conflict. Outcomes are a function of which tactics both spouses deploy. And this is also in your handout. And I'm going to just breeze through this one because no one either A, has conflict or doesn't like to deal with it. So we'll just let it at that. We like to compete. We like to collaborate. We compromise. We avoid or we accommodate. Again, there is minuses and pluses here. Emphasis on relationship will actually affect which method you use to resolve conflict. If your emphasis is on the outcome, you will use probably one of those top ones up there. And I'm just going to be vulnerable with you guys, and this is one of the areas that I struggle in. I don't like conflict unless I know I got it down pat, and then I'll just go. Some of us men will do that in the workplace, and then we try to bring it home and do the same thing. You're looking at him. Or I can resolve conflict better in the job site side of the life than I can at home. Why? Why? And that is some of the things that God is helping me grow in. It's one step forward, and that means one of the reasons why I've been here for 16 times, maybe you know why now, or 16 plus times, is the reality of it is that I look at this as actually an oil change like on a car. I mean, it's maintenance. We have to maintain and we have to continue to remember and be reminded of things that we can so easily forget. Things to consider. What's your go-to conflict tactic and why? Which emphasis can you increase in order to grow? And I'm going to breeze through these. I'm running out of time. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these this morning. But this is manipulation tactics. The first one is triangulation. And I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this one because this one might be a new one. There's going to be some of these that we're pretty aware of. This kind of manipulation happens when one spouse cites friends or coworkers or biased references to add credibility and social pressure. They do this to favor their side of an issue. It's like our third party person that's not visible. Examples include statements like, everyone thinks that, or Steve's wife lets him buy new guns, why won't you? Last time I was here in October and I could use the archery thing and all that, but this is Valentine's, you know, month or whatever, but didn't come up with any new ideas, but these are real things. We use this third party emphasis to actually try to control the subject at hand. On the other hand, a wife might argue Paul took his family to Florida last year, so why can't we go? So what? Let's have a conversation. I see some of you guys looking back and forth. I don't know. We're open for stories later, by the way. This person has a clear objective in mind. They build their case by including carefully curated options or opinions from friends and others. This makes the other person feel like they are on the wrong side of the issue. My question is, have you ever used this tactic to win an argument? Moving the goalpost. Not going to spend a lot of time on this one, but as you can pretty much envision, we move the goalpost. Just keep moving it, like dangling the carrot out there. We'll just see if they can catch up to us. We gaslight. The silent treatment. You know what that means? Yeah, just be silent for 2 days and then you've done it. Treating like a child. Again, these are just ways that we can manipulate and that we can control. And a lot of times we do this because we feel out of control. Again, I'm just going to move through these. Traits of a fox. This is where I go into catch for us the little foxes part. They're camouflage. They move quietly. They're deceptive. They're scavengers. They have good night vision. And they're solitary. And now I'm going to get into the little foxes. Defensiveness. Why we might become defensive. Because we might be feeling criticized or attacked, fear of being wrong or inadequate, struggling with vulnerability. Have you ever struggled with being vulnerable with your spouse? Misinterpreting feedback as personal criticism, protecting self-image in the relationship. Ways that we show or are defensive in communication is we use "you always" or "it's not my fault" statements. Redirecting blame toward the partner. Shutting down or withdrawing from conversations. I found this online and I just had to share it. Ugh, we'll be late. Well, if someone was ready earlier. My house knows that 15 minutes early is on time. Our oldest daughter's learning slowly. Impulsiveness. Reacting emotionally without thinking, lack of patience or emotional control, managing stress or emotions poorly. It could be reasons why we become impulsive in our communication. Ways we show it are interrupting our partner, making abrupt or harsh statements, jumping to conclusions, swiftly changing uncomfortable topics. You know, it's nice outside today. I see nobody that's guilty of that, so we'll just move on. Here's another thing I found: intent versus impact. What you think you said may not be what they heard, and this comes back to that whole thing around texting and all this. Guys, we have to be very, very careful. And if our spouse actually shuts down and doesn't say anything, let's assume it's our fault and figure out the intent versus impact part. Inconsistency. Fear of conflict or confrontation, lack of commitment to open communication, trying to please the partner by agreeing when changing, then changing the mind, or changing our mind. The ways we show it are failing to follow through on our commitments, sending mixed messages, avoiding clear answers. Again, consistency is key. This is the key to your spouse's heart. Dismissiveness. Perceive partner's concerns as trivial, discomfort with emotional expression, lack of interest in your partner's perspective. Remember the thing like this? You're gaining perspective when you're going around and around and around and around. And all that perspective actually matters. Because if you go back to the trait of communication style, you're probably communicating with someone that needs to know all of that and feel like they've been heard and understood instead of going straight to the point. But it's more efficient. Minimizing partners' feelings could be a way that this happens. Changing the subject when partners express concerns, using phrases like not a big deal, lack of active engagement in conversations. And you're going to look at this photo and go, what in the world is he trying to say? Sometimes in communication, your wife is actually, or other husband, is trying to actually express themselves in a way that is a scratch and we make a dent out of it. Or vice versa. It's a big deal to them. They're trying to explain to us that it's a big deal. And we think it's a scratch, no big deal. And so when I was looking for a photo to describe this one, I kept going around and around and around on it. And my wife came out and I showed her these photos. She's like, I don't really get it. I said, well, I can explain it because in my head, it makes sense to me. If you have a better example from the next time I'm asked to do a talk like this, I can upgrade the slide. Avoidance. Oh, isn't that thing cute? It's cute, all right. Fear, conflict, and negative outcomes. Feeling unequipped for difficult conversations. Preferring peace over addressing issues. Belief that issues might resolve themselves. Did you hear that? It'll just resolve itself. We dodge sensitive subjects, give vague answers, or we deflect, focusing on trivial topics to divert attention. These are all little traps. I'm busy, got work to do. Can't talk right now. Gotta go play ball with the boys, our son, or that little device right there. Not guilty of that one. Sarcasm. Practical tips here in closing. Practical tips for nurturing healthy communication. Effective listening. Ask perspective gathering questions. And again, this is just a recap of what we've talked about already. But I'm just kind of putting it here in bullet points as we wrap up. Effective listening. Ask perspective gathering questions. What perspective gathering questions are is do not answer a question with a response of a yes and no being the answer. Are you mad at me? No. Sentence, I mean, we're over. So how are you feeling right now? Is that a yes or a no question? Ask open-ended questions. I'm getting ahead of myself. Being thoughtful. This is something that I think is pretty important that some of us can struggle with. Some of us, I can struggle with. I'm assuming there's some of you out there too. Maintaining a respectful tone. Nonverbal communication awareness is being aware of our nonverbal cues. And this goes back into when we use a silent treatment. That's a nonverbal communication cue that we're giving, and we need to be aware of when we actually are doing that. It hurts. Guys, silence is actually a very sharp sword. Stay calm. Keep secrets. If there's something going on, doesn't mean the whole neighborhood needs to know about it. Specifically, if you want to have a healthy communication in your marriage around things that are important to your spouse. Use we language. Time matters. Give compliments. Use humor thoughtfully. Avoiding blame. Apologize often. Being open-minded. So these are just a few of the practical tips I'd like to leave with you this morning on nurturing healthy communication. And I'm going to leave you with this. Communication is a skill that can be mastered regardless of your past, personality, or disposition. And growing in this area is perhaps your best and most immediate opportunity to improve your marriage. And I believe this. Because when, in our marriage, when communication is struggling, other areas of our marriage are impacted. And the other thing that is challenging about this is that this starts with each and every one of us. This isn't a topic that it's like, well, it's over here somewhere, and if they fixed their thing, then we can fix our thing. We each get to control the changes that we want to see from this talk. God bless you, and I hope that this was encouraging to you all. And if you want to know more about how to put this into practicalness, we'll be talking later about 11:05 on the emotional needs part of this. Thank you.